you're looking for one of the most beautiful and playable custom acoustics on the planet, look no further than Ed Rice at Toe Ear Guitars. Ed is a true artist, transforming exotic woods into magnificent, sweet-sounding instruments. Go to toeearguitars.us, that's toeearguitars.us, and contact Ed today.
Hey everybody, Brad and I want to say thank you for listening and thank you for the support. Please continue to listen and share this podcast on all platforms that you can.
And if you'd like to support us monthly, we're set up now where you can go to anchor.fm/Top Hill Recording, hit the support button, 99 cents, $4.99 or $9.99 per month. Any amount would be greatly appreciated. Now back to the podcast. Recording podcast episode 118. What's up, Neil?
What's up, buddy?
Been a while, man.
Yeah, man. Welcome back.
So it's hard to believe I woke up in Bismarck, North Dakota this morning and got here about 20 minutes ago.
Wow. Yeah, man. When I rang your doorbell, I thought, I don't know if he's here or not. Yeah. I really didn't know if you were here.
Yeah.
You must have just got here.
So we made it. So I'm ready to do this. I'm ready to have a bourbon. I got that, you know how you get that greasy, grimy feel when you're on an airplane all day long, dude. Sitting around.
I think it's called COVID.
Well, we get to start off with a great guest tonight, George Stearman.
Yeah.
What's up, George?
Hey, how y'all doing, man? Long time. I've been trying to get in here for a while.
Yeah, it has been, man. You sounds like you're in those years where you're just running kids around like a taxi driver.
Yeah.
Dude.
Nonstop.
Sorry, we chased them down.
So how old are your kids?
I have a 16-year-old and my son just turned 13. My daughter's
okay.
16.
Yeah. Yeah, she driving herself now?
No.
Not yet.
She's in the process. Oh, I don't even want to think about that.
Oh, dude, trust me. I get it.
Well, you know, so my son is the oldest and my daughter's 2 years younger than him. When our son turned 16, he like just badgered us all the time. You know, he wanted to get his permit right away, get his license as soon as he could. I think he was like one of the last ones you could get in 30 days, you know,
oh,
your license.
Good.
And then my daughter, she had no interest in driving. She could care less about driving. Finally, she was going to graduate high school and go to college. And we were like, hey, Tia, you got to get your license.
You got to drive, yeah. Absolutely.
So they were complete opposites.
Dude.
We were kind of hoping that our daughter was going to be like, I don't know if I want to drive. But I think her friends were kind of like, she's the first one to turn 16.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. They need the rides.
She can play this one for a lot of gas money if she does it right, you know? Like, hey, you know,
that's what we said. Yeah.
I'm telling you, man. Especially these days.
Oh.
Ooh. George, dude. I see you brought us a bottle, man. What do we have?
We have some good old Basil Hayden. I'm not too up on all the bourbon. I like to drink the stuff, but I don't, you know. But
you're not picky, huh?
I'm not picky, but this seems to be the bottle that I keep coming back to, so I thought I'd bring some of that tonight.
That's a Rick Johnstone favorite, too, by the way. He's a Basil Hayden. My dad's favorite is Basil Hayden.
It's about as smooth as they come.
Smooth. Yeah, let's crack that sucker, man. Let's get drinking.
Come on, let's hear
Brad's
that.
Brad's been on a plane. He's ready to drink.
I tell you what, I'm ready to drink.
Dude, me too. I'm rain. I was like, are you kidding me with this shit? It was terrible. Tell you, today was a bad day.
I thought we got it all yesterday. And I looked out, I was at work and was looking out. I was like, man, it's like.
Yeah, dude.
You know, I was talking about being in Bismarck this morning. I wonder what it's like to be a postman in Bismarck in February.
Cold as balls.
Yeah.
Especially if you have a walking route. Dude. I guess you have to have snowshoes.
Gotta have like.
But you know, another thing, there's no way they deliver the mail every day. Because you can drive 15 miles between mailboxes.
Let me tell you something, buddy. Rain, sleet, snow, or hell, we deliver.
Do you think in an isolated area like, you know, you get outside of Bismarck. So we have a house in Carson, 240 people. Hmm? It's an hour drive from Bismarck.
238 right now, though.
Yeah.
You drive from Bismarck to Carson, takes an hour, and you probably pass 3 mailboxes in that hour. You think those people are getting mail every day?
Yeah.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Holy cow. They need to raise the price of stamps then.
Well, sometimes it's pre-sorted mail, so it's like, you know, an ad, and that's like 8 cents. And then you go, all right, am I going to drive 14 miles to deliver this 8 cent? And then you go, what if they got a letter they need to get out?
Yeah.
You got to go.
I bet they don't do it every day, though.
They're terrible mailmen if they don't.
Well, cheers, man. Good to be
home.
Cheers,
dude. Cheers.
Cheers, George. My brothers. Cheers. Welcome. Cheers. Cheers. Thank you all.
Always good to be home, though.
Oh, man. It's good to have you home.
I tell y'all what, I was driving up Mitchell Hill. I was having some old driving down memory lane, man. I haven't been out here for a while. You know, it's been a little while.
So you grew up in Fairdale, right?
I did, yeah. And, you know, gosh, I was driving by looking at stuff. I'm like, a lot of it's still the same. There's some stuff that's changed. So
yeah.
After you hit a certain point, it's definitely the same.
Oh, yeah.
Driving up this hill, it's like I was a kid.
Yeah.
I've always been, you know, up here, so nothing's changed. Ooh, we got guardrails. Yeah. We used to not have guardrails.
Just cables.
Jeff Donahue is the reason, and it wasn't because he was a politician. It was because he accidentally fell off the side of the hill and took all those pylons out. So I think that's why they were like, all right, I guess we'll do guardrails now.
I try not to take for granted this hill and this forest and everything when you come up, because you can.
Yeah.
You can just, you know, forget about it. But, man, this is one of, I think it's one of the most beautiful places around.
Oh, I do too. And I remember growing up, I tell people, you know, where I'm from, and they're like, oh, the Jefferson Memorial Forest.
Yeah.
Well, growing up, it was like, oh, they're gonna do this and do that. And I mean, nothing ever happened. They plopped the sign down, you know, of Jefferson Hill Road. I was like, you know, I don't think it's ever gonna happen in my lifetime. And looking at it now, I mean, like, I know people from, I'm out in the East End now, but like, all these people come out here to,
hike
and they love it. And they're like, that's where you're from. That's where you're from. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's beautiful, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, they definitely did a good job with the trails and all that stuff. Yeah. So if you're in the area, come visit.
Yeah. Well, it's like, I think it's close to 8,000 acres now.
Is it really?
Yeah, is it?
I think so.
Wow.
Yeah.
They're expanding. That's awesome.
So, man, you were talking about listening to one of our podcasts and seeing one of our guests. What was that this past weekend? Scott T. Smith.
Yesterday, right?
It was last night.
Last night. Okay.
Yes.
So what is today? Thursday. So it was Wednesday night?
Yeah. Where
did this go down?
This went down at Zanzibar.
Oh, okay.
And we saw John R. Miller and Vincent Neil Emerson, who's out of Texas. That kid is phenomenal. They're both phenomenal. But it was a great show. It was not too pleasant this morning, but the night was fun.
So yeah, Scott and Ellie, man, two of the best to do it around here right now. You know.
Yep. Well, we're assuming it was Ellie.
It was
because he introduced her, and I was it was a pleasant surprise because I thought there were two people on the bill, and when we came in, the guy was like, "Oh, there's three bands tonight," you know. So we weren't expecting that, but it was.
That is a pleasant little nugget right there to walk into that.
Oh yeah,
that's a heck of a duo right there.
Her playing and his vocal range is like, oh my gosh.
So, what was the crowd like last night?
It was
a little thin after the rain.
It was. The room. Yeah, it was pretty thin, but it. You know, that's
still
fine.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was.
Great for the people there.
Well, you know, that kind of it set the tone for the evening. That rain. I mean, because it was. Rush hour, 4:30 to probably 5:30, dude. It was torrential. So it's like sideways, barely seeing. If you're on the expressway, you're crawling. It's the blinker, you know, your hazard lights on type of rain.
Yeah.
So I think anybody that had any intention to go do an event like Waterfront Wednesday, which I went to, same deal. For Waterfront Wednesday, the crowd was light, but it was awesome because the weather ended up perfect, you know.
Oh, the temperature was, you can't beat that, man. Yeah. That was beautiful.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
So it was like we got this little private show for us, and the Photons were on the bill with...
Did you get to talk to them any? Or
I didn't, but Jalen was up there playing bass for us. I was like, oh, that's, you know, she's awesome. And then the Bowl Boys, who are local, we got to get those guys on here at some point. They played, and then Maggie Rose, dude.
Who was unbelievable.
Used to be Marcus King's backup singer. real. So, you know, Kim made a great observation. She said, oh, she's gone. You'll never see this again, this version of this, because she is so, it, like, the, everything is so well written and almost like produced, not in a bad way, but in a, they have set her up to just get ready to.
Her, she's a pro. Huh?
Oh, dude, she's got like a soulful blues style, but her voice is like Christina Aguilera strong, not tone-wise. It's better, in my opinion, because it's more that bluesy, soulful feel.
Yeah.
Not that, I don't know. Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. Anybody that was cool. there last night, which actually, like Trev Sachs, there's a bunch of people that I saw, Stuart Wiki, a bunch of people went, and if they stuck around, unbelievable. Yeah. All right. Sorry.
I was thinking last night, our show, there were like a lot of musicians there, local musicians. I was running into a lot of people. I was like,
yeah.
It was a cool crowd. I was like,
it was almost like the diehards. It was,
Totally.
It was people that were planning on going and decided, we're going to go anyway. Screw the rain. We're going to give it a shot. What time did you all get out of there?
We got out around, it was close to midnight.
Oh, yeah. We were way out of there by then. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's why I was paying. I had to get up at 5 o'clock this morning because the real job came in, you know, the music, you know, but the real job that keeps the lights on, you know. So I had to do that. It was fine. It was worth it.
It's always worth it.
That conversation's come up a lot on here about local musicians supporting other musicians in Louisville. I mean, that happens a lot. You go see somebody and you see a lot of musicians
that's
there to support and listen and enjoy.
It's a good chunk.
Yeah.
A lot of times it's, you know, there's a handful of 5 to 10 or, you know, who knows more than that. It's awesome. And that's kind of the thing with, you know, Ellie, she plays with Hot Brown Smackdown. She has her own band. You know, she plays with other people and supports other people when they do their thing. And it's just, that all comes full circle. So, I mean, it's amazing. You know, one of our first podcasts, I think it was 3 or 4, was Ego. And it was just talking about having that battle of competition with people that are trying to do the same thing as you and realizing that, you know, there's room for everybody.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
I mean, just look at the city and the boom that is Louisville and, you know, some of the places that like you're playing right now. You're playing all over town and the Merle's Whiskey, and there's just all kinds of amazing spots and opportunities for people to get out and do the thing. And so when you have that type of community, it's just, it sets things apart, I think, for me and what's going on, because that's just kind of, there is none of that.
Yeah.
Because how many people have we had in here? No spills. That
that was pretty good.
That was pretty good. How many people we had in here multiple times with, you know, Fiona, Casey, just... Yeah. We've had
Trev Sachs.
He's been in 3 or 4 times with 3 or 4 different groups. It's just cool to see that, and not only in here, but to see it supported. Yep. And it's awesome.
Yep. No, it really is, man. This town, I don't get out as much as I would like. Because I mean, I used to go out all the time and see live music.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like now these days, the only time I'm getting out is when I'm playing, actually playing. But I tell you, we used to do the Towns Van Zandt tribute.
Oh yeah,
and I did it. Oh my gosh,
at the Rudd.
All over Jim Porter's.
Yeah.
But it was nice because Towns is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But to see all the musicians that I don't get to see all the time, you know, and it was just a big hanging out and hey, how have you been? Blah blah blah. Because you don't see anybody, you know. I don't.
Yeah.
And it was just so nice. And I mean, so many different people, so many different types of music. You know, I loved it. I never really got the whole ego thing. Like, oh, you're trying to take over some of my territory. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't care, dude. There's enough for everybody.
Absolutely.
You know, I welcome all the good musicians. Like, I'm like, it makes me better. You know, I'm like, the dude I saw last night, Sean, and I was like, this dude's killing it. I was like, that's inspiring me. I was like, this dude is vocal range. It's off the charts. So I don't get that. I love it. I love being around good musicians. And
I get it now.
You can always learn, man. You can always learn. You can.
Heck yeah. Let's jump in here with a question we usually start with. Why don't you go back to childhood and tell us about your early memories of music? And, you know, then maybe at what point music became, you knew music was going to be a big part of your life.
I was thinking about that question and because I was listening to the podcast and I was getting a feel for it. And honestly, man, what I came up with is that I don't ever remember not singing. I mean, I've been singing forever. And my mother told me, she's like, you learn to walk and talk. And as soon as you were talking, I mean, I was just always singing. I don't, you know, the guitar came around a lot later, and I look back now and I'm like, it's really, if I have any regrets in music, is like, I should have started earlier. Cause I grew up around a lot of musicians and a lot of guitar pools and people playing. And I didn't care. You know, they had to twist my arm. My brothers would always twist my arm. Oh, come sing a song. Come sing a song. Back in the day, I used to have a little bit of a higher voice. So I love rock and roll, you know, but country was always the bass. And, but no, I don't ever remember not singing. Mm. And it just, I don't know.
So when did you start playing guitar?
20. I was 20 years old.
Okay. No kidding.
But that's that's very late in my family. And, and I'm going to tell you this quick story is that I used to go out, I guess it was in the 90s, I guess. Karaoke was very popular. So I would drag my girlfriend, which is now my wife. We'd go out, and I'm not trying to shit on anybody. I don't know if you can cuss on this podcast.
No, there's no cussing on this.
But
no,
I'm just kidding. But out of 25 singers, there would be like 3 or 4 that were pretty good. And the other 21, 20, whatever, would be just like, oh, and I was like, which is fine. But I was like, I can't do this, man. I want to learn how to play. My brothers, they've been on me for so long, you know, it was like, you got to learn how to play. So that inspired me to, I got to learn how to, I mean, you know, do songs in my key or whatnot. Mm-hmm. So yeah, 20 years old. And, luckily I took to it pretty quick. I mean, I'm not a great guitar player, but I was able to make the chords and progressions. And
so with, you had to be able to like pick it out pretty easily. Do you think with your brothers and the musicianship in the family, once you started, it was easy because you could hear it?
I do. I really do. I really do. That would be my best guess because I never took any lessons or anything. My brother actually, I still have this, it's a little black book and he drew them out. You know, now I got my daughter
a
poster, you know, but like, you know, G, C, D's, like E minor, you know, whatever.
You still have that?
I do. I still have that.
That's cool.
So yeah, that's how I started. And I swear to you, it doesn't feel like it really took that long. I mean, I'm sure it wasn't great in the beginning, but I was just playing enough, you know, to sing songs, you know.
That'd be cool if you can pass that book on to somebody else at some point.
Dude, that's
well, my
that's
son,
so
my
cool.
son, I'll say my son, he's 13. He just told me the other day, he's like, Dad, we bought him a guitar a couple years ago, you know. He didn't know. He
That's what you're supposed to do.
But yeah, so he'd come back to it and he told me, he's like, I think I want to start learning how to play. And I was just like, ooh. I've always told him, I was like, I'm not going to push it on him. My daughter sings now, but I'm just like, I just want him to learn, you know, because they both love music. And it's like, just for something down the road, you don't have to play the bars, you know, whatever. Just if you're hanging out with friends, if you're hanging out by yourself, I just love it. I can't imagine my life without it.
Dad, I think I want to play guitar. Dad, are you crying?
My wife's thinking, oh, here we go.
I had this conversation with my boys. I was like, one of you all needs to play guitar because whoever plays instruments is going to inherit amazing stuff. I don't have any crap anymore. So somebody needs to learn something.
Dude, I'm right there with you. Right there with you. I've graduated. I have bought and sold and traded so many guitars. Mm-hmm. And I got a nice section now. I mean, I could always add. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah.
But I've got a section that they were like, people are like, oh, this guitar. I'm like, no, they're just keeping them. I'm going to add to that. I'm not getting rid of them, you know.
Hey, man, turn around real quick and then look to your right. Look to your right. When we started this, he had that maroon one.
Yeah. Yeah.
All those are since the podcast. That was before.
Boy, then you all enforce this for me. You can never have enough guitars, right? You know,
well, you know, they all feel like a little unique slot.
Absolutely, yeah. Different song, different tone.
Yeah,
it's like
It's a non sequitur. It's a no brainer, and anybody that argues differently is just wrong.
Wrong.
I mean, it's true.
Yeah, they don't understand.
I'm going to step away from this conversation.
You're just not as smart as we are.
No, not even close. Not even close.
You know what's wild too? You could play two instruments that were built back to back. You could play two Martins that are both D28s that were built. Here's one serial number and the next serial number, and they can feel completely different.
Yeah.
It's wild.
I've seen it. I've, yeah, and I'm just like, yeah. You know, yeah, I agree.
So what I think we're saying is we need to invest in more
we
guitars.
We gotta start looking for some more guitars.
Oh, I do. I get online every once in a while.
Facebook Marketplace is the devil.
Yeah. Yeah.
What I wouldn't love to have that.
There's a lot of them out there too.
Oh, not a good ones.
And there's a lot of, there's probably like a lot of COVID guitars now, I bet.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. Because people are like, I'm stuck at home.
Yeah.
I'm going to learn how to play the guitar. I've always wanted to. And then they're like,
Yeah.
Well, maybe I need to
pray on
that.
That's what that Telecaster was. Yeah. It was a COVID guitar.
Yeah, but
so I bought that used, but it still had the plastic protective covering on the pickups and the chrome and everything.
Yeah.
See, that's what I'm an acoustic guy, but I've always loved the electric. I think that's what I would be the Telecaster because it's more country sound. But,
dude, yeah. I'm telling you.
But the Stratocaster, like, I'm a rock and roll dude at heart, you know, but I just can't sing it.
Yeah.
Nope, dude, I'm telling you right now. The most versatile guitar in the world is the Tele. It is the Telecaster. I love the Telecaster. I've got a lot of guitars, but my God, dude.
Well, I called you when I was at the guitar store. Do you remember that? Yeah. Or did I text you or something? And because I was looking at a Strat and a Telecaster, and I said, which one should I get first? And you said, well, 9 out of 10 people would tell you Stratocaster, but I'd tell you Telecaster.
Yeah.
I like that you said, which one should I get first?
Yeah.
So there's going to be a second person. There's going to be a second person.
You know
that's,
what?
That's
I
awesome.
Didn't catch that in the question. You're right.
I should get first.
So when you were singing as a kid, what were you singing? What do you remember?
I remember, I'll tell you this.
Rock and roll?
But early on, this is a pretty early memory. I remember singing a Merle Haggard song, Are the Good Times Really Over? And I remember my mom let me sing this. You know, it said, you know, stop rolling down a hill like a snowball, headed for hell. So I thought, you know, hell, I thought that was a cuss word. You know? So I would just sing that line all the time, you know, until
sing Everett Board real loud.
Yeah. Until eventually she's like, the word wasn't bothering her, but she's like, okay, you're singing the same line. Okay. But no, I did that. And, you know, growing up, MTV was pumping. So I remember I would, like, get everybody in the living room and just emulate the video singing. I would go all over. That's when my voice was a little more higher, you know, like a higher pitch. And I loved everything. I mean, my brothers, you know, Southern rock, you know, Skinner, you know, all that stuff, you know, Ozzy Osbourne and, you know, Led Zeppelin and for whatever. And then there was always George Jones and Merle Haggard and Willie Nelson. And for me, a big one was through the 90s was George Strait because, I mean, he was all over the radio.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I was all over the place. But my voice, like I said, my voice changed. And I'm telling you, I'm an 80s rocker at heart, but I just could not make it work. So my brothers were like, you've got a pretty good country voice. So I was like, all right, I guess I'm going to stick with this. That was always the bass. So
were your brothers playing live music? Were you hearing live music then?
Yes. My oldest, no. But it's funny, the oldest is the one that taught both of us to play. Mm. But my second, I'm the youngest of five. And my siblings are a lot older than me.
Brothers?
Two brothers, two sisters.
Okay.
And my second brother, he's the third oldest, I'm sorry. He played all over town and he moved all out and he tried to make a career out of it. But, you know, he's a struggling musician like a lot of us. But my oldest brother, yeah, he never played the bars or anything, but he's the one that taught us all, you know. But the second brother, he's the guy
that's interesting. Yeah.
He's the guy that I get mad at because he can pick an instrument up and he can play anything.
Yeah.
You know, like work on it. Like, I haven't mastered the guitar. I mean, not mastered. I haven't figured the guitar out. It's been 20 plus years. I'm like, this dude's playing the dobro and, you know, banjo and whatever. I mean, it may not be great, but he can play enough, you know, learn it enough to sit in with people and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I was always envious of that. He's like, well, you have a better voice than me. I'm like, well, I want to be a better musician, you know. So.
What do you think percentage-wise, if you had to put a percentage on it with people like that, how much of that is skill and just natural, and how much is just the confidence just to do it?
And how much is knowledge? It's splits. It all splits. Because if you know the string pattern, you can play stuff. I think if you can play the piano, you can play anything. I really do.
I agree with that. I really do.
Yeah. So like I started on the piano and I can play the piano. I'm not great at it. I would never be able to play like a concerto or anything like that. But you know, I can play Benny and the Jets and some cool stuff if I need to and listen and do all that. But having that bass and then starting the guitar, if you know the instrumentation and you get the like idea, then you can sound it out and it makes more sense if you have a little bit of knowledge. Because I'm not dangerous with what I know, but I know just enough to figure stuff out. So there's that balance. Like, you know, you can pick up a mandolin, you can play D, C, G, minor, do all those little things if you know that it's the same setup as a violin. You know, it's just, you know.
Yeah. I just always wondered, I guess, you know, what does the confidence come before the skill? Or does the skill come before the confidence? Or is it just like, because, you know, some people, it just seems like, you know, they're just not scared to just go with it. You know, if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out.
Speaking of, I'll be playing bass with Acquainted Stranger on June 11th. If you're bored, come on out.
Are you really?
Yeah.
How'd that happen?
Ian can't make it, I guess. So they asked me to do it. And I was like, okay, yeah, I'll do it. So I guess it's confidence before skill.
Hey, confidence is very important, so.
Yeah. Let's listen to a George Stearman song. Let's talk about the hill.
That was it's about Jefferson Hill, right around the corner from here. I grew up on Jefferson Hill, and everybody that I grew up around, we just referred to it as the hill, you know. And I don't really claim to be a serious songwriter by any means. That song kind of just fell into place really, really, really quick for me. I don't know, you know. People say, oh, the song wrote itself. It kind of felt like that. So, yeah. But, yeah. You know, I wish I could do it more often, but I can't. But that, it's just a little shout out to my South End people.
Okay.
And, Jefferson Hill Road.
So. Cool. And this song's been around for a little while, right?
Oh, my God, yeah. 2005 or 6, somewhere around there. Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah.
It's and what album is this on?
It's on an album I recorded back in 2012, Make Time. And it's a long time ago. So, I'm hoping I can get something done soon. So, we'll see.
We know a place you can record.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm going to hit y'all up.
Well, let's check it out, The Hill.
Up on a road we call the hill, and I still think of it as home today. I guess I always will. But I moved away back in 95. It just wasn't the same after my mom died up on the hill. I can hear those guitars playing loud. We threw us a party, there was one hell of a crowd. Big bonfires and busting out the tunes. We're all singing those country songs and Doris playing the spoons up on the hill. I get back up there now from time to time. There's a lot of good memories running through my mind. Where I'm gonna be after I've gone on. I can still smell that old wood burning stove up on the hill.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, dude. So, all right. What I like about this, really, most everything you've written is, it's very visionary. You can see what you're saying.
Yeah, it's a story.
It's a story, and visual. You can, and it's not just because I literally live around the corner. and I know what you're feeling, because I just, when you can see it, you talk about still being able to smell the wood-burning stove, things like that, that are the little details that bring out that oh, I can, not only can I understand, I can see it in my head.
Yeah.
That type of stuff is awesome. And I think what bothers me is that you don't write that. If you're not talking about not writing that much, it's like, come on, man. You write a good story.
Well, for me, it's a confidence thing. I never, I never really started out the right songs. I'm just, I will tell anybody all day long. I've been telling people forever. I'm a singer first. I love to sing, you know, cover songs, you know, that's inspires me to play. You know, I love a lot of stuff, you know, but going through life, you know, when I started playing gigs and stuff, meeting people, they're writing songs and I've always, I was like, oh, it's cool. You know, so I was like, I'm going to give it a try, you know, it's like a story. I wish that I were more poetic where I can just write a song, you know, it just doesn't come easy for me. You know, I have so many bits and pieces on my cell phone now, which I love the cell phone because now I can just jot it down and save it. But they don't flow out of me. And I know a lot of musicians like you all do. And I was like, oh, it drives me crazy. Like, oh, I wrote two songs this week. And I'm like, man, I'm like, I can't do that. But now I feel like I keep writing the same songs. Like, you know, I can't put an album out with the same song, just, you know. But long story short, it doesn't come easy. But I love it. It's something that when you're out playing and people request your song, I mean, I'd never experienced that before. You know, of course, a cover song, like, oh, play this song, blah, you do that great, or whatever. You know, that's fun, you know. But when people are actually coming to the gigs and requesting your songs, it was hard for me. I didn't really know how to take it at first. I was like, I was a little embarrassed, a little shy, you know, about it. I don't know. I am today. It's hard for me to sit down and like, hey, man, listen to this song. Just play it for somebody.
Yeah.
At the gigs, I'll just slip them in, you know. And I'm like, and if somebody's like, hey, what was that? You know, who sings that? I might say, hey, you know, whatever. But it's not comfortable for me. But I hope to get to there. I hope to get there someday because I do enjoy it. I do enjoy it when it happens. But it doesn't happen.
Is it is it part like too personal? Is part of it that? Is it part of it like, you know, if I put this out there, because, you know, songwriting doesn't necessarily have to be storytelling about yourself, which a lot of yours are, which is cool.
Oh, a lot of it is, yeah.
Is it like, you know, that it is personal, these stories and journeys. It's like writing in a diary sometimes let me put that to music.
Put it to everybody. Send it out there to the world.
Yeah. I don't think hard enough about it, I guess, most of the time. I just go, here we go. I could imagine that would be part of it. If some of the issue is like, you know, even slipping them in and not necessarily going, hey, this is my song, blah, blah, blah. It makes it, I'm just wondering if that, if the personal side of it is.
You know, I don't think so. I mean, you know, like, that doesn't really bother me. It's just, I guess the quality of the song. It's like, you know, I don't, you know, is it a good enough song? You know, like,
well, hell yeah.
You know, okay. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
No, for real. Like, it's like, because I'm singing the cover songs and I'm kind of selfish because when I'm out playing my gigs, I'm playing songs that I like, you know, I the beginning I would play top 40 radio, whatever, you know, as years have gone by, I was like, I'm playing stuff that I like, you know, like, and there are requests that I will do requests, you know, if I know, you know, I fake everything, by the way, but I do, you know, I'm playing songs that I love, you know, like that I want to play, you know, and it's like, so when I'm writing, it's like, if that's not, of course, it's not up to certain standards, but it's like, I'm like, it's gotta be a decent song, you know, if I'm not feeling it, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like,
okay,
I don't really want to play that.
But you know, I wonder how many songs though, like a professional songwriter, I wonder how many songs they write before one hits them like that. You know?
Oh, no, totally.
Like,
totally.
How many bad ones do you write, or just average ones do you write before you get a good one?
And a lot of people we've had talk about it. Sometimes you got to write the bad one just to get it out of your head, to go, all right, that's some shit that I'll never record or tell anybody about, but it's no longer in there. Yeah. I can move on to the next thing.
I can relate to what you're saying, George, because I like to write. Well, while you're sitting here thinking, I was kind of comparing it to painting, like painting my house. Like, I hate getting ready to paint, getting set up to paint, but I don't mind actually putting the brush and the roller to the wall.
That's some Miyagi shit there, dude. Hey, Mr. Miyagi. Paint the fence, bro.
It's kind of like that with songwriting. I won't ever just sit down and get started doing it, but when I do, I enjoy it.
Well, I was going to compare that to what you did. I mean, because Brad wrote a record 20 years ago and then didn't write anymore until we were like, well, until you wrote the song that started all of this, really.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to ask. If I was going to ask George if you've ever tried like a songwriting group.
And would you like to be in our group?
I have not. Listen, that's where I'm at. I have not. I think I would like to do that. I've come out of my shell, you know, and just try it out and just see, you know, I think it could help me.
It's amazing what having a deadline can do. Like if you know the group is meeting two Wednesdays from now.
Yeah.
Just kind of forces you to sit down and do it.
I think I need it. I really think I need it because I'm pretty freaking lazy. And I'm like, you know, I don't practice. Let me tell you something. When I play my gigs.
That's practice.
Yeah, the gigs are practice. And I take my gigs very, very serious. So it's not like I'm not showing up to half-ass. But I just don't practice. I just don't have time. But it's like, I tell people all the time, and it's the truth. I'm faking everything. Everything is like, I listened to the songs, you know, the cover songs. So I was like, I kind of got the gist of it, you know, whatever. But I'm faking it. I don't ever sit down and really, really learn it, you know. And if I did, you know.
Man, you're telling all your secrets.
Dude. I know, but I'm like, this is my therapy, right? I'm like, if I did, maybe I would actually be pretty decent at it. But, but the songwriting, I would love to work on the craft because I love it. I appreciate it, and I love, you know, it's great.
I tell my wife all the time. So I hit these spells where I'm like, I'm going to start practicing an hour every day. And I'll do it for 3 weeks, and it's amazing how much better I get in just amazing. 3 weeks. And then I just quit doing it. So it's like...
I would say the same here. I'll try to like... I'll read something or I'll listen to a podcast, and somebody else like, their method, what they do, and I'm like, oh, I'll try that. And I'll do it, and I can see that it's, you know, hey, it helps me. And then I just gradually, it's like working out. It's like exercising. It's like, oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And you start out, you're running hard, and then you gradually like, I'm not going to go today.
And that's such a weird thing we do as humans. You know, you talked about exercise. So I went, I had a really high stress job for a long time. So I got up every morning and I made myself work out. It's just the way I handled it. I did that for probably 5 years, and there wasn't a single morning that I ever wanted to do it. But every time I did it, I felt great when I was done. So you sit there like, why did I not want to do it? Knowing if when after I do it, I'm gonna feel great. So why do you not want to do it?
That's me with on the stretching side. As I've gotten a little older, it's like stretching. Mm. It's like, you know, it's time consuming, but you feel so much better. And I'm like, and it's like, why wouldn't I do this all the time? But I don't do it all the time. It's like, you know, I don't know.
Something weird about humans.
It's very weird about humans. Very weird.
I wish I had the dedication to do a lot of things the way I have the dedication to not work out.
No. Exactly.
Yeah, that is.
So, all right, I got a question. All right, this is kind of going back a little bit, but about the when you were writing. Because I think that, you know what, at this point in our lives, we know what we like, we know what we don't like, we know what we love to play, we know what we love to sing, and what is our thing. Do you think, moving forward, like, when you wrote the last record, were you writing it because of what you were writing in the chord progression and the things you were playing is what you loved, or were you writing it to not gather an audience, but write it for the masses, write it for people that this is what's going on in the music scene these days or whatever, not necessarily, but kind of in that vein, compared to if you wrote now, would you be more free to just write what you want to write?
Well, to answer some of the questions.
There were six questions. Well,
no,
sorry.
No, I think I was writing at that time, and what I've been writing, again, the selfish side, it's just for me. It's like, and you know, and not, I'm not like, oh yes, yeah, I'm just all about me. But I was trying to say some stuff, and it was like, it for me, it's like, I just, people were like, oh, you just need to play it. Cause it's hard for me to just play it, you know? And people liking it and requesting it, that's like a bonus for me. I don't think I can write, you know, especially today, like a radio song or what?
If you did, I'd be ashamed of you.
I couldn't do it.
You can write a song about Chili's.
I couldn't do it. I could write a song about Chili's.
There's already one about Applebee's.
I can write a song about Chili's. But I could not write a radio hit to save my life. I mean, you know, there was a time that I wanted to, 90s, you know, but I didn't take it serious then, you know. I was like, oh, you know. Couple of lines here or there. It was horrible. I've looked back over that stuff. And I was like, oh my God, that's terrible. You know? So, but no, I think I've always just, my songwriting, my brief songwriting, it's just been stuff going on with me. And it's like, I wish maybe I could work on the melodies a little better. I don't know, sing it. I don't know. But I feel like, no, I don't think I write for the crowds because I don't. You know, they're not gonna. I kind of like upbeat. Well, no, that's not true. I like sad stuff. I like sad country songs. I'm not a sad person. I love the sad stuff, but the upbeat stuff, you know, is fun as well. But I tend to, I think I'm rambling here, but the sad stuff is what comes out of me a lot of times. And it's like, you can't keep writing 20 sad songs. You can't play a set of sad songs. You know what I mean?
A lot of people like sad songs.
Yeah, they do. I do too. And it's like, oh, it's making me depressed. I'm not depressed, but it's like, I love to hear the sad stuff, you know? Because it's real, you know? And it's like, people are, you know, put the steel guitar in there and it's,
shit. Well, throw a steel guitar on anything.
Oh, anything.
When I heard about the, reminiscing about the bonfires and the guitars around the bonfires on the hill, I thought about your place, Neil. You might have to invite George. Let's go. You know,
he's probably going to be busy, but we'll invite
you. It happened all the time. No, I would love to come. I'm not busy for music. I'm busy from life. People were always like, "Oh, you're playing." I was like, "Well, no, I'm balancing the family life, you know." But I think it's gonna slow down this summer, so. Yeah.
I don't know, dude. I looked at your schedule recently. Like, I had George playing 6 places this week.
Yeah.
There's only 4 days left.
Well, we're going to see how George's voice holds out. See, here's the thing. In the past, I've never played enough to like, I'm always curious because Garth Brooks, I'll use him as an example. This dude's playing 3+ hours back to back to back to back. I think there's no way I can do that. But also, every gig that I play is like a Saturday night. I'm like, it's like the end of a tour. Like my gig is like the end of a tour blowout. So I was like, George, I'm talking to myself now. It's like, George, if you just chill, you know, have a drink, don't drink as much. And you know, what do you want to do? Crazy songs. I think I could do it, but I don't know. Every show is a Saturday night, last gig of the tour.
Every show is the last gig of the tour. It is always packed.
Well,
You bring a crowd, man.
You bring a crowd, dude.
I'll tell y'all what, I'm very lucky because they keep coming out to see me. I don't know. See, I'm a good faker. I've been faking the crowd for so long, you know. So.
You know what you do right, man? You get the words right. You know, that's what I like. I'll sing Brown Eyed Girl and get half the words wrong, and everybody knows that. You get the words right.
Neil, that's not true.
What?
I mess up words to every song, and I tell people they've caught on to me. I'm like, if you see me up there smiling on the microphone, I have fucked up the song. And I can't, my wife, Maggie, she's like, you just have to play through it.
Just keep rolling.
Listen, don't
give yourself away.
No, because I'm a musician too. So it's like, if I'm at a gig and I hear somebody mess it up, you know, it's all good, but in my mind, I'm like, they messed it up. So that's what I'm thinking in my mind when I'm playing. I'm like, oh, shit, I messed it up. Somebody out there, I don't care if it's one person, 30 people, one person's like, oh, he missed this song. That wasn't right. So I want to acknowledge.
So you might as well smile to that person.
I know that you know that I know that I messed it up, basically. So yeah.
You're going to introduce, hey, I'm George Stearman. He'll be smiling. Somebody be like, his name's not George Stearman.
He's lying.
He messed up his name.
He's messed up his name. But I'm telling you, listen, like watching videos and stuff, the best mess up.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, I finally come to grips with that. I was like, all right, they mess up. You know, if Bruce Springsteen messes up lyrics, it's okay if I mess up lyrics.
It's a lot of words to remember.
Dude, I keep thinking, you know, that I have a brain injury when I sing. So maybe it's just everybody does it that has.
I don't know. There's some people, Brent West.
Brent West.
He hears a song one time and knows the lyrics start to finish.
Doesn't your kid do that too?
Yeah, my son Brent and my daughter Tia. They both can do that. And I'm so envious. I don't know where they got it. They didn't get it from me. They hear a song. Every song that comes on the radio, they sing every word to it.
It's ridiculous, dude.
My daughter is the same way. And it's like, I have never, ever been able to do that. Now when I'm playing gigs, I'm like thinking about past the song that I'm playing. I'm like, so it's already in my mind. Like, oh, you know, what am I doing there?
What's my next song?
Yeah, and then I'm getting all out of whack. And then I start laughing. Yeah. I'm like, all right, I effed that one up, guys. blah, blah, blah. But my daughter's pretty, I'm like, keep that girl. Because that's something, because there's a lot of people like that can do that. I've never been able to do that.
No, dude.
I'm horrible. And it's like, I can't even remember the words to the songs I wrote. So it's like, you know.
I can't even remember the chords or the melody to a lot of
them. No, no.
Let me ask you guys a question. Did y'all sniff gas too as kids? Or is it just me? I thought that was just me.
It was in the background. Faint smell.
I don't think I ever sniffed it.
I was nose to the nozzle.
I mean, now like almost $5 a gallon. That's some pretty expensive stuff. I mean, I don't know, man.
That's an expensive drug.
So where did you learn that?
Yeah,
did that come natural?
You know what? I actually thought about this recently, and I think that my dad had to have said, "Don't
sniff
gas."
Your dad was a gas sniffer.
No, at some point he might have. I think he probably said, "Whatever you do, don't sniff gas."
Don't sniff gas, boy.
All I heard was sniff that gas, boy. The highest I've ever been in my life was off gas. It was the last time I did it. I remember to this day. I know we're off topic here.
That can't be good for your brain.
It can't. I was probably 8. Maybe 7.
Oh, yeah, your brain's all jacked up then.
Here's what I remember. We had just gotten our sidewalk redone into the pebbly stuff that they have, the pebbly shit.
Yeah.
And mom and dad's room was still a garage. And I was at that corner, and I'd swear I nozzled that thing. Probably for a full 15 seconds. And when
what happened?
I started walking up the pebbly sidewalk and the world was wobbling, dude. I was it was like you did 1,000 spins. And then,
what is it in gas that makes you high? Do you even know?
I don't know. I didn't drink it, but it was amazing. But I got to the door and I think I knocked on the door and my mom answered the door and she said, "Neil, you sniffed the gas again."
She didn't. So you were a known gas sniffer.
I was a known gas sniffer, dude. I had gas sniffer.
Damn that gas, boy.
I used to get high as hell on some gas and ride the garage door up and down. I don't know how I'm alive.
We got to have an intervention for our 8-year-old.
I'm learning a lot tonight.
All right. So you're saying that's not why I don't know the words to these lyrics?
I don't think so. Who knows?
Long-term effects.
There's a part of your brain that's like, I don't know. Yeah, I don't even know.
Dude, good times.
It doesn't sound like fun.
A part of my brain's like, look, he knows the song. They're talking to me that he knows the song. This part's like, well, I mean, he's on his own, you know. Well, whatever. I don't know what he's doing, you know. So.
Well, the bad thing is, too, is that alcohol definitely hits your lyrics part of your brain.
I'm coming back to every show that I play, every gig is like the last of the tour. So listen, this is my plea to you people who, if you listen to this podcast, help me get through. Pretend when I'm playing tomorrow, I have to play another gig. It can't be the end of the tour gig. It can't be the blow. But like people like David Hicks and all those guys. They want to keep. Bringing it up. Hey, bring it up.
Party's going to go.
Bring it
up. Let's go.
And then everybody, listen, this bourbon stuff, they're like, oh, he likes bourbon. So then like they're sending shots of bourbon. I'm like,
oh, wow.
Speaking of, hand me that bourbon.
Absolutely. They send this bourbon up and it's like, guys, doing the math, there's like 5 shots back there. If I do 5 shots, you guys are probably going to call the EMS.
The show's over.
Yeah, the show. There was a many, many years ago, when I would play, I was on a tequila binge, and I love tequila. So one night, some friends from work, you know, they all came out. It was a great night. Well, they were like, oh, he likes shots of tequila. This is no exaggeration. There were 8 shots of tequila back there. My wife, she's bitching. She's like, you can't drink that. So I had to tell the guys, I was like, guys, if I drink those 8 shots, I drink 4 shots, show's over. I was like, you all are going to. So I was passing them out. So I was like, I got to be careful when I tell people, sure you do. Hey, man, last night there, the guy was, Sean was like, oh, I like bourbon. I'm like, no, you might want to be careful because people in this crowd, you know. But you got to be careful because people, I'm like, dude, just put it in the tip jar. Listen, I have like 10 shots back here. Just put it in the tip jar.
I think when Scott was here, we went through a full bottle, didn't we?
Yeah, we had a good time.
Yeah, Scott, he's a good one. That was so fun. We went through a full bottle.
I think his last introduction was something like, I'm up here with the Top Hill recording bourbon loving boys.
Well, I mean, listen, from an outsider, when you're driving up the hill, Mitchell Hill, you're like, where am I going? I mean, dude, I knew where I was going, but I was like, I get it. It's like, dude, it's, yeah. It's great.
We got that several times. People come, I didn't know I was going to drive up a mountain to get here.
Yeah, and then pull in a house and not get murdered.
Well, if you're driving, look, you're coming this way. You look to your right. You get the overlook of Louisville.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, never gets old. I love it. I love
it's
it.
My house.
I love it, dude. I love it. That's awesome.
That's where we have our bonfires.
Man. Oh, dude. That's
beautiful. Yeah.
Love that. I love that.
So you said the hill you wrote in 2005. Is that when you recorded it?
2012
or something was the
record, that's
right?
That's when I did that.
Yeah, because 2012.
I did. It was I wrote it then. Didn't do anything with it. Wow. I went to Nashville. A friend of a friend. I work out of Ford, and a friend that I work with on night shift. His cousin was a sound tech or something on the Grand Ole Opry.
So all
the guys at work were super supportive. Like, oh, I never thought about recording whatever. Like, oh, you need to go do this, do that. So a friend of mine, Jay Custis, his cousin, Scott Custis, he's like, I'm going to hook you up with my cousin. Go down there, And it was in Murfreesboro. It wasn't actually in Nashville. But a lot of those guys played on the Grand Ole Opry. And I recorded five songs. And, it was a great... I had no clue. I was like head spinning. These guys were...
So you had studio musicians in there on that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Super. And I have all their names down, but I don't know their names right offhand. But they were great. And so I recorded that, but I never did anything with it. So I was like, that was like 2006, 2005, 2006. So it's like late 2011, early 2012, I was like, man, I just need to put something out. So a guy, I did Danny Flanagan.
Ah, Danny.
Louisville legend. I love Danny. He's a badass guitar player. I did his radio show, and a guy was in the crowd. He's like, and we got to talking, and he's like, hey, my buddy has a studio out in Goshen.
Was this when Danny was at Clifton doing
yes,
the Clifton?
Clifton. Okay. Yes. So I was like, you know what, man? I want to put like five or six more songs. It was nothing. It wasn't. I just wanted to put it out. It wasn't at that point. Some of the songs were very old. So I went with those guys and put the songs out. So they're kind of, some songs are kind of like Nashville done, some kind of, whatever. But I learned a lot. What I'm getting at is I learned a lot. So this next time around, it's like, I want to, be more hands-on. I don't know if I know shit. I don't know anything. But I kind of know what I'm looking for the next time around. So, so that album, some of those songs are very old, and I was really tired of them.
This is the year, man. So this is the 10-year.
Yeah, it's time, bro.
It is. Yeah. My
10-year challenge.
My cousin Bobby Meredith is the greatest, because he's like every show. He comes out to every show. He's like an encyclopedia on country music, and he's like, you're leaving a lot of money on the table. You need to get merch.
Yeah.
You need to get some albums. I'm gonna. He already told me, like, we're going to Texas. He's my bus driver. And I love it. And he's not wrong.
Well, but here's the thing, dude. They say if you have 1,000 people that support everything you do, which is merch, records, shows, you've got like 200 of those already. you just need like 800 more.
I need 800. So if you're listening today, 800 more. Just
that's all I need.
So, dude. George is like the one person that's been told, hey man, my cousin, he down at the Grand Ole Opry, and he actually was down
at the Grand Ole Opry. He was. The dudes, they played with Jimmy C. Newman and all these Opry guys, and I was like, yes, okay, let's do it. So they took my money, which wasn't cheap.
Yeah. Thank you, Scott Custis.
Yeah, Scott, yeah. I haven't even seen.
Cousin Jay?
Yeah. Jay left Ford and he went into the ministry and
praise the Lord, hallelujah.
Yeah.
Amen.
I'm probably sinning in his eyes, but he got me on the right direction. So, but those songs I did nothing with for a long time. And I was like, shit, dude, these songs, 2012, that's 6 years later. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I've either got to just let this go or I've got to do something with it. So I was like, oh, I add more songs to it, blah, blah, blah. And we did that and so it's kind of pieced together. So the next time around, I'm hoping to be in sync a little bit more. But I've got to get past writing the same old song, unless I want to put an album out.
What do you mean by that? What's the same old song to you?
drinking, all around the world.
Drinking, I'm drunk, song. Blah, blah, blah. You know, and I love my... here's the thing. People, some comments are like, have you written a song about your wife? I'm like...
That's the hardest thing to do.
It is. So that's why I have not... I have started. I've tried. But it's to her and...
Dude,
I want to tell her, Maggie, in your defense, it's such a high standard for me that I don't want to bullshit a song. I want it to be a good song. It's just not there yet.
Every song I've written about my wife, she's like, I hate you. No, I'm just kidding.
I was going to say, thank you.
No, it's not true. I've written a couple good ones.
Well, let's listen to another one. Tell us about Bad Luck and Me.
Oh, dude, let me say before you, I love this song.
Yeah.
That's some Keith Whitley stuff right there. Well, George Strait, Keith Whitley shit.
That wasn't entirely my song. My brother Dave Woolen, my second brother, he wrote that and he sent it to me and I added a little bit to it. It was his song. I added a little to it, but he was like, dude, I can't do anything else with it. You know, whatever. So I liked it. I liked it. And the guy, Mike Baker as a guitar player, in Nashville, he added the little doo 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 to it, and I was like, "That's beautiful. I love that." So that's actually my favorite song on the album that I put out. So yeah. Bad Luck and Me, my brother Dave Bullen.
All right, let's check it out. Bad Luck and Me.
Staring across this fresh cut field, the sky is dark, well it must feel like me. Lonely and blue, sharing thoughts, the wind is still. I see no stars, but yet they still shine through. Somewhere on you, maybe life has seemed better, but I think I'll be alright here in Tennessee. And through this night and all this weather, I think I'll see the light. And all this rain can't wash away the pain, like scars they are lessons we learn. And in my eyes, it seems I'm watching my whole life going down the drain, with nothing but bad luck and me to blame.
All right, man. So lyrically, it's good. What I think I love about the song is that is your vocal sweet spot. That is where the sweet, sweet spot of your range. You can go above and below that by all means. But when your tone is, I think, the most natural right there. Is that in G?
It's in G, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I think you're like, that tone is so... It's beautiful. It's beautiful. It really is. It fits.
Appreciate that.
It fits lyrically. Your tone fits what the lyrics you're doing. The music is right out of like post outlaw pre 90s country stuff, which is I think another sweet spot that's coming back into what's becoming big, because I think people are getting out of the hip hoppy backbeat shit that's terrible.
Thank God.
I think we're getting there. I think we're finally moving out of that. I think, you know, the Sturgill Simpsons and the Tyler Childers and those guys are bringing stuff back around to like a happy medium. If you go to Nashville, that's not evident. But if you go like to a Billy String show in Nashville, it's evident. You see the crowd and the things that are going on outside of the bars that are, you know, American Nashville country that's going on right now.
Yeah.
So, dude, I think like, my feel on that is the lyrics are great, the song's great, but vocally, the performance is awesome.
Appreciate that.
And I think that might be why, part of the reason I think you might like it so much is because your brother wrote this, is a big part of the writing. But somewhere in there has to be it's because it just sits perfect. It's like in the spot, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, it felt good. No shit. It felt good. When he sent it to me and it was like, it was in G, and we kind of toyed around with it. And I was like, yeah, I can do this.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have to. It's not, I'm not having to strain. I'm not to exert anything. It's like, it's just there.
Not the end of the tour show song right here, dude.
No. Listen, guys, absolutely. If I can get a couple hours of those songs.
Dude, you're in. You're in.
Yeah. So it's like, I have to be able to sing tomorrow. And there's gigs coming up next few months. I'm like, George, you're going to behave yourself. Mm-hmm. You can't throw down the first night because you have two more nights after that. So it's like, yeah. And I'm always curious how those guys do it. How do they do it?
Yeah.
All right. So I know right now I've learned since we started doing this and just talking to other musicians, there's tricks, not even vocally, but drop tune half a step.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, I've heard a full step. I've heard, you know, there's a band out there that drops a full step. So it has to help. There's tricks, but
that takes a little bit of life out of songs, though.
I think so. I mean, it's a cheat code. Now, if you listen to, say, Superstition or songs in that era where there are guitars, and a lot of times they didn't tune. They just tuned to each other. So it's E flat, in between E flat and E. There is no Tony Rice is notorious for it, dude. You try to emulate, you have to go, okay, don't get the tuner out. I'm going to tune to what he's doing because he is definitely G flat. If I'm playing
G flat three quarters,
it sucks. Like, right, let me just listen to it. Okay, I'm going to play it in standard G.
Hey man, you mentioned something I got to ask you about. How was Billy Strings in Nashville?
Oh my God, dude. All right, so
I did see that. Oh my God, that dude, before you even answer, that dude has taken
he's the best.
I'm going to cuss again to the fucking another level. He's off the charts.
And he's built a Grateful Dead type following.
That's exactly what he has.
But he's so smooth. It's like, listen. I'll say, it reminds me of Stevie Ray Vaughan back in the day. Like, they play so effortlessly. Like there's no effort. You feel as a guitar player, like, oh, I can do that. Because it looks so easy. It looks so easy.
Yeah.
No, you can't do that. It's like, and why he reminds me, and he not Stevie Ray Vaughan, but in for me, like watching him play, he makes it look so easy. Yeah. I'm like, oh, I hate this dude, and I love him all at the same time. Yeah. I'm just jealous. I'm jealous.
Yeah. He's definitely made me a better guitar player because I've become a fan. I've dug into trying to do some of those runs and some of those solos and that type of stuff that is. It challenged me. Fortunately, I had a broken foot like 2 years ago during COVID. So I had four months to sit and digest.
Yeah.
And I did.
Yeah.
But I've seen two guitar players in the last, I don't know, 5 years live. Actually, when would COVID start? 2020, February 2020. I saw Marcus King. It was at the Mercury Ballroom. And it
was
unbelievable. Well, dude, I had VIP passes, me and Spencer. So we got to go in and listen to his sound check with him and the band and about 12 other people, maybe 20, and listen to 4, 5, 6 songs, then meet him, and then watch the show. And by the end of the night, I was like, this dude is the next guy that's taken over the mantle for Stevie Ray. And then at the end of that month, we went to Headliners and we're 3 people back from Billy Strings and his band. And it was like, holy shit, in a completely different manner, same thing. This guy is...
Can't wait for that Iroquois Amphitheater show.
So after that show, I've seen Billy Strings a couple times now, but the Ryman show, we went and saw him at Railbird last year, same deal. I was, you know, 50 feet from the stage, one of the first people up. But this Ryman show, 4 hours. So every show he does, they do, it's at least 2.5, 3 hours. They do 2 sets. They come out. It's no opener. It's them, 2 sets. So Ryman, they come out. They bring out, first one they bring out is Ronnie McCrory. Mandolin, he comes out and it's like, what? All right, he goes, he plays 3 or 4 songs, goes out. Next thing you know, Les Claypool from Primus comes out with a acoustic like dobro bass. It's the wild. It's so Les Claypool, and they play all this stuff. They end up playing a Primus cover. It's nuts. he goes back, and then Bob Weir comes out. Bob Weir comes out and starts playing, and then before the set ends, Marty Stewart.
I saw a picture of that. I love Marty Stewart.
Dude, Marty Stewart. He's a legend. He still looks the same.
He does. He's got gray hair.
Ridiculous.
Listen. They cropped my face onto his hair one time, and I was like, damn, I wish I had. Marty Stewart has great hair.
He has great hair.
He's a country music historian, and he's a great. Great musician.
Unbelievable.
That's a crazy show. I'm so glad y'all got to go.
Well, here's the craziest part. We take a break, come back out, they do another 2 hours. They bring out, at the end of the night, Primus is playing the next night. So I think after Les Claypool played, he jetted. At the end of the night, they bring out everybody. Bob Weir, Ronnie McCurry, Marty Stewart. And they play like 4 songs.
Like a jam.
On one mic, just like we're getting ready to do in this room. The last song they play, just take a guess. I know you'll guess what song it was. Just think historic, legends.
Right, okay, my guess is going to be Will the Circle.
That's it.
Is that right?
That's it.
Well, only because I'm thinking, because Marty Stewart is such a historian, and I'm thinking the rhyming.
That's exactly. I told Kim, I told my wife, I said, they're going to play with the Circle Be Unbroken.
I'm crying. I'm being serious, dude.
I got chills right now thinking about it because it was such a crazy,
crazy one mic in that venue. Oh, my God.
And guess what? It was an elephant trumpet mic, too.
Was it?
Yeah, we might have to get one. But
I'm so jealous.
It was amazing. And then even better than that, I mean, we walk half a block and we're at our place. But it was nuts. 4 hours. Unbelievable. Awesome. Iroquois Amphitheater is the next one. If you don't have tickets to that, you need to get it. You can still get tickets for like $70 on the Sunday.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Because I looked in it. I mean,
go through the website. You got to go through Billy Strings. Don't go through Ticketmaster. You can still get it.
Because I just got tickets to Willie Nelson. I'm going to. I love Willie Nelson. But I wanted to see Billy Strings. But the ticket prices that I saw at the beginning, I was like, listen. I'm going to have to eat breakfast with him. He's going to have to, you know, the prices that they were. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, I can't be paying this.
No.
I might pay that for Willie. Dude. But
Billy Strings, I'm telling you, you'd be the best $70 you ever spent. Because you'll be like.
I know. You don't have to. It's a different thing. Dude, I've been on him. YouTube.
It's a different thing.
I'm just like, I'm watching him play. And I'm like mad at myself. I'm like, George, you got to fucking play like this.
You can do it.
No, you can't.
You got to start practicing.
No, you can't. He's like, his hands are like, do. And it's like. It looks so easy.
Practice?
You can definitely get closer.
We're talking about practice?
You can definitely get closer.
I'm not going to
trust me, man. Hold on. Wait, before we go.
All right.
I had something else to say and I might have forgot.
Practice? We're talking about practice?
Are we talking about practice? No, I don't remember. But dude, I'm telling you. I do remember. So... here's our challenge. So we had Raylan Nelson coming on the podcast, but we had an issue. We had to cancel on her. So Raylan Nelson's Willie Nelson's granddaughter.
Granddaughter.
She has an awesome band and a great podcast. Music is funny. Listen to that. It's hilarious. It's her and her guitar player interviewing comedians like Doug Stanhope, and it's great. We got to get her on in studio with... her guitar player, see if we can't get that done. JD.
Is she coming in with the Willie and the family thing?
I guarantee she'll be here with Willie and the family. And
all right, George, for our listeners, man, tell us where they can find your music, find whatever you have out there, can see you play.
I'm a cheapskate. I don't have a website. Facebook, find me on Facebook, George Stearman. You can find me on Instagram, George Stearman Music.
Stearman.
Stearman. It's not Stearman. let's see here. Twitter. This is my old account. GTS1977. That's the year I was born. I don't post them there often, but I'm on Facebook and I'm on Instagram. And one of these days, I'm going to grow up and get an actual website. But you all can find me on there.
The album out there right now is called Make Time. Right.
Make Time. It's an old album. And it's prehistoric in album terms, so hopefully in 2022, I'll put a new album.
Let's go!
All right, man. Well, we're going to close with The South End of Town. Tell us a little bit about that one.
That song for the Make Time album, I told you guys about going to Murfreesboro, doing that stuff. We already added songs for the album. I had some other songs I wanted to add to the album. And I was working night shift at Ford, and I was like, oh man, I was like, this song, you know, South End of Town. I'm from the South End. You know, I love the South End. The South End has been beautiful to me. They still are beautiful to me. And I love it. So I was like, I need to write a song, South End of Town. Or, you know, I need to write a song about the South End. So before I went to work one afternoon, it just, you know, it's pretty quick. The funny thing is like, the studio didn't do it justice. I felt like it came along as like a Hanson bop, you know. I'm going to nitpick on that. I wasn't very thrilled with that, but whatever.
Wondering why I went, South End,
absolutely, no, absolutely. So, but the message was there. I want to pay homage to the South End because they've been good to me.
What are you doing out there in the East End then, man?
Yeah, come on, bro. What's up?
Well, my wife.
Tell her.
But listen, before we leave.
Hey, Maggie, come on now.
Maggie, listen, I met her. Her mother graduated from Fairdale. She went to Holy Rosary and graduated. So she came out, listen, and her dad was from Shavley. So I met an East End girl whose roots, Watsonville. That's all my wife's family. But I met an East End girl who has South End roots. It was a match made in heaven. And they're all musically inclined. It couldn't have been better. I was like, this has got to be the girl that I'm going to be with. You know, as she, for better or worse, is probably worse than her part. But anyway.
So, Neil, your brother had one of the best Holy Rosary jokes I ever heard.
Uh-oh.
We had an intern at work, and we went out for like Friday after drinks one time, and talking about where you went to school and everything, and I think that she went to Holy Rosary. It might have been another Catholic school. I think it was Holy Rosary, and your brother said, oh, every Holy Rosary girl I've ever known has only been for one night.
Amen.
You know.
But that's not Maggie.
No.
Listen,
for life.
It's for life. She's kind of like my cousin. She's like, you're leaving. This is what she is. You're leaving money on the table. You need to be doing this. You're doing that. I'm like, girl, I just want to play music. You know, I'm not good at the other stuff. I'm not even good at this. I was so worried.
This was terrible. This is awful.
I was worried coming here. I'm like, I'm not a good interview. It's like, you know, like, I don't know. But thankfully, you all infused bourbon in me. That kind of helped me out a little bit.
You did that.
You know, I'm learning. No, this is a great setup, guys.
Well, since we're learning, I want everybody to take note that George is like, I'm just not a natural songwriter. I can't really write songs. It's just real hard. One day before I went to work, I thought, I need to write a song about the South End. And then he wrote this song.
And so he said the same thing about the hill. This is one of those songs that just came to me.
Fell out because I was like, I need to write a song about the hill.
But guys, that was a long time ago. Now these days, I'm still writing the same songs. I'm home. I think I'm going to put an album, a concept album out of the same song in different keys. You know, I'll get a lot of good musicians. They'll make me sound really good.
There you go. That's all you need.
Yes.
Well, George, man, I'm glad we finally got you in here.
Hey, listen, thank you all so much. Again, driving here is down memory lane coming up Mitchell Hill Road. And you guys are awesome. I want to tell y'all, thank y'all so much for coming out to the BA Colonial, seeing me that one night. I had so much fun that night. Thank y'all so much. I didn't get a chance to talk to everybody. I love everybody's like, oh, I love to talk to everybody. It's like they're wasting their time to come out to see me. You know what I'm saying? No, seriously, I know what it means. Like getting babysitters, blah, blah, blah. I'm trying to get out there. I want to thank everybody. And I don't think I got a chance to thank y'all.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, we don't need babysitters anymore. I believe child abuse at this point. They can stay at home by themselves.
We're going to break all this down, do some one-shots now.
Yeah, let's go.
Let's do it.
All right. And here we are going out with the South End of Town.
South End of town, where a lot of good rednecks and old country boys can be found. Driving those back roads and making homemade wine. They ain't got a lot of money, but somehow they get by in the South End of town. Cowboy boots, blue collar roots, a work truck and a drive, a little piece of land, hard working hands. But don't put them down, hoss, 'cause you don't know what it's about in the South. drummer, bass and John. I break out my six string.